Independence Day for a few more days.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. So let's see, I think the next thing is public comment. Do we have any public comments for agenda items? Anybody? No? Okay, that was easy. I guess next is approval of minutes for the last meeting.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve it. I gave Valera a couple minor changes from plural to whatever.
Right.
They were just minor, so.
Right, and we need to add that Trent was absent.
Trent was absent, yeah. So you've made a motion. I'm in favor. Pauline, you're in favor?
Yes.
3-0.
3-0. Trying to keep it quick for you there, Megan.
Okay. My mom just arrived at the airport, so I'm anxious to.
You mean she's still at the airport? Okay.
No, my husband's picking her up.
So
about 8:20, I'm out of here. So
approval of the agenda for today. I've been through it. It looks good to me.
Yes.
I'm approval. Yeah,
yes.
For
three up.
Okay. And informational items, a report from the Las Vegas Valley Water District regarding current well levels, status of Blue Diamond Water System, and other related concerns.
Yes. Good evening, Jordan Bunker with the Las Vegas Valley Water District. Just a really quick update this evening. The monthly reading and data collection for the James Harvey Wells was completed on June 28th. During the well read, our hydrologist noticed that the south well transducer, that's the remote tool that is used to collect and report the well level data, wasn't working, it was broken, so we're getting a new one. Hence, you only have the well levels for one well on your graph this evening, but that should be back up by next month. The data gathered indicates that the north well has a static water level of 17.04 feet below land surface. That's a decline of just about 6 inches since last month and about 4 feet since last June. As far as system operations are concerned, there was a main break on Village Drive last Friday. The crews came out and repaired. There were a few customers that were without water for a very short amount of time while the pipeline was repaired. This was an old 4-inch pipeline that's going to be replaced here in short order here in the next few months as part of the system improvements we've been talking about so much. So that shouldn't be an issue anymore. Other than that, the system remains in stable condition. So that's my report. If there are any questions.
Did you say that the line's going to be replaced in 4 months?
Within the next few months, it's part of
You mean you're starting like physically to start within the next few months?
That's the current schedule.
Oh
yes.
My gosh, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Jordan, should there be an improvement in water quality with the old iron pipes and stuff going to the newer stuff, the PVC or whatever the heck it is? Or doesn't it really matter at this point in time?
Well, obviously, water quality matters.
Yeah.
The Blue Diamond Water System water quality does either meet or exceed all state and federal standards as it currently stands. So the improvements won't necessarily improve the water quality, but they will provide additional protection against any adverse impacts to the water quality, if that makes sense.
Yes.
It might reduce some of the lead, right? Because you're moving away from those lead solders.
That would be a Derek question because I'm not exactly sure what every single pipe in this water system is made of. But
is there a high lead content there?
I would not call it high, no.
Because I would think that over time, calcification over the lead would prevent much leaching, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. If there's any trace of any sort of water contaminants, it's at minimal trace levels.
So
like I said,
yeah.
That are well under.
Have we done a town IQ level test?
But just for everyone's benefit, we do provide an annual water quality report on the Blue Diamond page of the Water District's website, and it tells you every single thing that is that is traced in the Blue Diamond water system's water, if you want to look at it.
So you say it's down 4 feet for the year, is that what you're...
Since the well levels were read last June, that particular water level has dropped 4 feet.
So does it, does it replenish, does it come back up and
or if it rains,
just keep declining, or is it...
It's amazing how intricately it is tied to rainfall. So because it's been so dang dry, yeah, we've seen the water levels keep going down. But keep praying for rain. It looks like we're going to have some sort of a monsoon season, better than we had last summer at least. So fingers crossed that we get some good rain. It usually takes, my understanding, between 2 and 3 months between when the rain falls up kind of in the Spring Mountain Ranch area for the water to come down here to the aquifer. So there is a bit of a lag.
When they put in the new system, are they going to put in the same amount of monitors where can they detect leaks in the line, or are they going to add up a lot more around town? I don't know exactly how they work.
I know that we have fairly recently installed additional monitors.
Okay.
I don't think we'll be adding to them, but they'll remain in place for sure.
Yeah, so in certain parts of town they have them, and so you can tell where...
Exactly.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you, Jordan.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And so next we get a report from Metro and Sergeant Pickerel. Who of you are up?
Hey, Sergeant Pickerel, Las Vegas Metro. There's no new reports, but I'll gladly answer any questions that anybody might have.
Anybody?
Yeah.
I have a question. Do you know how the fire started over the one that was...
the Cottonwood?
Yeah, the Cottonwood. Oh, well, the second... Well, I think... Yeah, anyway, do you know...
It was ricocheted from around some machine around it.
And what about the second one? The second one?
I don't know anything about the second one, but the first one that came up east of Sandy Valley Road was caused by a ricochet.
Yeah, that was ricochet. I don't know what started Cottonwood. I don't think they determined
it. Caused by a ricochet.
It's still on the Sandy Valley.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, I'm not aware. I just had one. When we ran the Mount Springs one on the Sandy Valley roadside, I just happened to be, I was part of the what's called Unified Command, and one of the investigators from BLM was there. So he told me what his prelim investigation was. Mm-hmm. That's how I have that information.
Does like copper jacketed lead ammo, does that tend to cause sparks?
It's a good question. I'm not an expert in it, but the way it works historically is people are allowed to fire on BLM land, and what happens when you have the right conditions is when people start firing it into the sand, dirt, or whatever, it starts ricocheting off of things.
Off of other ammo?
Sparks, and then an amber or spark lands on, say, a Joshua tree.
Uh-huh.
And then with the dry weather and the way, basically the framework of the desert, it spreads very quickly.
I see.
And then the way they explain it to me, like on Mount Potosi, you have peaks and valleys, right, like ridges. Once fire gets in one of those deep canals, it's like sucking water through a straw and it just fires right up.
Oh, yeah.
And then it creates all the problems that you see. But as far as the second fire, I don't have any information on that.
Is there any kind of way to prevent that kind of shooting?
It's tough. It's real tough because people are allowed to shoot on BLM land. There are guidelines in place. A lot of it's common sense, but unfortunately common sense isn't in the law books. you know what I mean? But historically, the way we try to utilize it is, and I'll use the Sloan shooting range. You familiar with that? Right off the 604 Lafayette Boulevard, by Speed Vegas, where they race the cars. It's kind of a catch-22. So historically, that's where everybody goes to shoot on the Sloan side, right? And the county has done a great job. They've actually done post and cable out about a half a mile, Megan.
It's BLM that's doing that.
Okay. So historically, that's where they shoot on that Sloan side. A couple of things. Why is it good and why is it bad? Well, it's bad because you have ricochets that go into the freeway, guys riding bikes, they get hit.
That has actually happened?
That does happen, yes.
Yes.
You
don't
call freeway. Now, if we were to completely shut down BLM through legislation, what will happen is, now instead of having everybody contained in one spot, they're now spread out all over the desert. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a pick your poison type of thing. At least we know where they're all at. We know where the shooting range is. Sandy Valley Road has one of those ranges. It's limited, and it's a lot smaller in size as far as the Sloan side goes. But unfortunately, people have rights to be on that land, and they have right to shoot. Now, you know, people say, well, they're too close to the roadway. Historically, it's about, I believe they have to be 300 feet off the roadway. But
no, half a mile.
Half a mile on that?
Half a mile.
Half
That's
a mile?
My rule. I got that. Maybe.
And that just recently changed, and because Megan did a lot of work on that, and we were using Sloan as a kind of a, as far as a reference point. We come across it, my guys, we come across it all the time, because at the end of the day, you don't know who you're approaching in the middle of the desert that has a three-way rifle, right? So those are things that we have to address as we see fit. I would love to sit there and say, everybody, pay attention to gun safety, the weather, so on and so forth. Sandy Valley, the Mount Potosi fire on the Sandy Valley side is a perfect example of that. That was caused by careless shooting, you know. Unfortunately, they have rules on their side too. So we can only work within the framework that we have, and hopefully a good conversation, and they see, you know, how it works out. I would like to see the Folsom Cable scenario work out well, and then use that platform for other places like Sandy Valley Road on the Mount Potosi.
What
Mount
is the posting cable system?
It's forcing them, because the rule is half a mile,
yeah,
but nobody really knows half a mile,
yeah,
and or doesn't go far enough for their half a mile in their head. So the posting cable is like a corridor that goes back, that they can't go off the road. It makes them go half a mile back before they can park and shoot.
Right. We do one thing on the Sloan side. One thing that my guys do with a lot is, you know, I'll call it what it is. People from California, that's who we deal with. They will literally stop on the highway and shoot from their vehicle. Randomly.
Well, that's shooting. Clearly illegal.
That is legal, absolutely. For a couple of reasons, but that is illegal. But they don't. They see the Sloan shooting area, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, they literally stop their car and just start flying around into the desert. They don't know, there could be campers, there could be, there's a lot that goes on there. I think NHP does the same thing that we do. We won't make traffic stops in front of the Sloan shooting range.
Whoa.
Because the chances of a ricochet or someone turning on us, like we hit the cops, is so high. We'll actually, if we lock in on a vehicle for whatever reason, whether it be interdiction or just simply as traffic, we will ride it out until we're past that Sloan section, either to the north or to the south, before we make the traffic stop.
Wow, so is it okay to go extra fast through there for safety reasons?
Well, I do.
I'll be right behind you.
No, there's been at least 3 documented cases of bullets going through the roof of cars in the fast lane, where I drive every single day, which is a little scary. And there was a cyclist that was shot in the leg, on a charity ride that Commissioner Jones was on several years ago.
Wow.
And there's been multiple fatalities.
So if it's coming through the roof, though, you clearly need to be wearing
multiple
a helmet.
Multiple fatalities?
When you're driving through that segment.
You mean in,
nice
in
combat
traffic,
helmet?
In
and
no. In shooting.
You have a lot of ADs there.
The
here's the thing. I don't want to paint Sloan with a bad brush, but the reality is this. There's a lot of good people that go out there shooting, okay? There's a lot of bad people that go out there shooting, and there's a reason for it. There's no regulation. You don't have a range master. It's very simple to get to. It's right on the outskirts of town. You don't have the rules and responsibilities like you would at a normal range, like say the Clark County range, or one of these prime ranges like PFC. So what happens is you have a mixed bag. And unfortunately, you know, with the good people, there comes bad people. We deal with a lot of people from California.
When you say comes bad people, what, or, I mean, or, because I'm always a little paranoid going to these public shooting areas that are unsupervised, but I've never had anything other than, you know, cordial, you know, how are you doing kind of things. People kind of stay away from each other or whatever. What, are there, like, people that, like, are shooting each other out in these places?
No, but it's gangbangers, or there's gang members that are using their weapons that they stole, are they using crimes? You go to a public range, you have to sign in your name and ID.
Right.
They're not doing that.
And they're shooting in every direction. There's no, it's chaos.
I've never been to that one.
Yeah, it's not a formal shooting range.
Right.
Right, right.
It's just a desert area that over time, people just collectively shop there all the time.
Yeah.
Now, ideally, you know, the county BLM would like to just shut it down completely. But at the end of the day, you have to pick your poison up. At least we know where all these people at. Because if you throw a grenade in the middle of it, it's literally going to send everybody in 100 different directions.
Well, frankly, and it'll ruin the Sandy Valley Road shooting area, too.
And that's the back road.
The Sandy Valley.
Not by my house.
The Sandy Valley Road shooting range is a little different. That's your farmer. That's your, you know, that's your, you know, Farmer Joe ran out of his grandson shooting a rifle.
Right.
You know, even with the fire that they had on that side, there was no intent in that.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was just a...
Are we talking about where when you take the road to Pahrump and hang a left on Sandy Valley and there's stuff along the left, and that's where the fire was?
Mm-hmm. It started there, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And again, I'm not an expert in fire patterns or anything like that. I just...
I can see where it would go up the mountain though and stuff like that. Yeah,
yeah, and they explained how it works, again, and I'll give everybody a safety tip. When you go to these ranges, like the Sloan Range or the Sandy Valley Range, or even out in the middle of the desert, or even at a county range like they have on the far northwest side of town, if you're by yourself, do not run dry with your firearm. And what I mean by that is don't be the guy or female that's on the range, right? And you're all stoked, you got a brand new gun for Christmas or whatever, you're sitting there, you're doing your target shooting, you run dry. Because what happens is, bad guys literally sit and wait for you to run dry.
Mm-hmm.
And then they walk up to you with their guns that are not dry, steal your gun and steal your wallet. So a tip with this, and I tell my dad, he goes to the ranges all the time. You know, him and his buddies, they're like a cult. I joke around with them all the time. But I stress those points to them. You know, if you go out with your family or whatever, and you're with your husband or your wife or whatever, always have a firearm on you that you're not shooting. These gang members, these bad guys, their intent is not you. Their intent is, we're going to grab this firearm, we're going to cause destruction to you and your family, and there's nothing you can do about it. Right? So those are the things that you have to think about. I went up to the Sloan Range one time to go shooting. Once. Say that again. Yeah. One time, right? And I'm a cop.
Yeah.
And I could see literally the patterns. I could see what was taking place. I could see the lookout vehicle, you know, sitting in one spot. I could see the van on the other spot. There's another issue we have, and I know BLM knows this, is we have crews that go out there to pick up all the brass, right? Because there's money involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's competition between the crews. We've been out there many times. It breaks out in fights. It breaks out in assaults. It breaks out in vehicle damage. Because one's mad at the other that they got out there. See, it's kind of a unique place. It's kind of a unique place. But like I said, there's a lot of good people out there.
Well, I appreciate you sugarcoating it for us.
the whole sugarcoat thing. Here's my responsibility. My responsibility is to get an accurate narrative.
No, I know. You know, I've always avoided that area, though. I had a bad feeling about it, so,
It's tough, and BLM and the county, they have a tough road ahead, but like I said, the posted cable, hopefully it works. It looks like it's definitely structured to work, and they put a lot of money into it to make it work. Unfortunately, it's just kind of like that, you know, what's the one element that will go through anything at the time? Water, right? Because it's got time to do whatever it wants. It might take 1,000 years to drip through a rock, but it's going to do it. Same with this scenario. Over time, you know, I'm sure people will vandalize the system or cut the cable or do whatever. But they definitely, BLM's definitely put in the money, put in the resources to do what they can to control that narrative.
And what about tannerite? Is that still legal?
Mm-hmm. Sorry?
Did the tannerite explain targets, is that still legal?
You know what? I haven't heard that it's not.
It's posted against it, though. It's not like posted it like it's a law, but it says, like, don't be an idiot, basically.
Right. So here's the things about certain certain products. It's not illegal to make or sell. It's illegal to have. Now, I'm not saying that target's illegal to have, but I'll give you a perfect example. A meth pipe. You can legally buy a meth pipe. You can walk into a smoke shop and buy a meth pipe. It's not illegal to have a meth pipe. What's illegal is the residue that's inside the pipe, right? So if you walk up a bag and you get a clean meth pipe, there's no charge against that. It's the residue inside that's illegal. So once they use it, so it's not illegal to sell, it's illegal to use. So as far as those targets go, there might be at some point a county code that says you can't do it. Doesn't mean you can't sell it, right? The fireworks are a perfect example. We can't have certain fireworks in Clark County, right? It's legal to sell those illegal fireworks outside of Clark County. It's just illegal to have them. So, you know, we all see it, right? Pahrump and all that. We can sell these illegal fireworks, but they're not illegal to have. They're just illegal to use. It's kind of a weird scenario. That's just the way the law works.
And for whatever it's worth, I've never seen anybody use tannerite targets when I've been out shooting in the desert. So.
Well, there was two fires in Level Canyon, and both of them started with tannerite. Right.
Those are the targets too, that people use for gender reveal babies, right?
Oh.
They fill it up with paint.
Oh, right, yeah. Wasn't there somebody killed at one of
those? There's
been
a bunch of them killed.
Oh,
yeah.
But when were these tannerite? Because you're not allowed to shoot.
2017.
Okay, because you're not allowed to shoot in Level Canyon anymore.
Well, right. That was what was one of the things that started that whole initiative.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like I said, I've never seen anybody do it, you know, so. I'm not saying they don't, but it never happened while I was here, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we actually patrol them.
I can just add on to yours too, Katrina Williams.
Hi, Katrina.
Hi. Field manager, Red Rock Stone Field Office, BLM. We're in fire season right now, and so if you go down Highway 159, you can see that we have the fire levels at high. We're in a drought too, and we've got a little rain, thank goodness, and we're hoping for some more rain, but our fire team for the BLM in general in Southern Nevada is looking closely at areas like Sloan and Red Rock, of course, and looking at 4th of July weekend, just making sure that we're keeping a pulse on people using fireworks, or we're focusing on unexploded ordinances as well. So the fire team is also going to have some interviews on social media with some of our staff too to talk about fire, so maybe I can send Megan a link or something and you guys could check that out, because it's a really cool thing that we're really focused on fire prevention. So
good. Thank you, Katrina.
Yeah. Just to piggyback too, I don't want anybody to have any depression that because it's BLM land you can just shoot on BLM land, because that's not the case. I can't jump my back wall at the Derrick Canyon, which backs up to BLM land, and just start shooting. It doesn't work like that. There's actually maps that show where you can shoot on BLM land, and where it starts is Sloan. So that's why it's so popular, because everybody's seen the map with the blue dots of where you can't shoot on BLM land. And it starts at Sloan is where you can shoot. But there are things that we have to take into consideration. A guy might be on BLM land somewhere off of I-15, say by Seven Magic Mountains, and shooting. It's not a blue dot area, but common sense kicks in because he's endangering people. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's kind of just checks and balances, win, don't win. But trust me, we're well aware of it. I know BLM guys are awesome. We work with them every day, and we do our due diligence. Another thing on that Sloan side, we have a lot of people both on the California side and the Las Vegas side that go out there to commit suicide, and they're committed. They're not calling the police, they don't want the police help. So we come across the aftermath a lot. We also come across the person in crisis as they're trying to do it. They don't want our presence.
Yeah. When you say a lot, like, what's a lot?
We go to a suicide call, the aftermath of a suicide call. Again, it's peaks and valleys, peaks and valleys. I'm not going to put a number on it, but it's regularly. We deal with it on both sides. This is California. The people that's going back to California, they lost all their money back, you know,
old night. Macabre, but it's sort of so funny. Really.
It's kind of that last hurrah type of thing. But we come across.
Save the last bullet for themselves. That's
you know, there's just a lot going on right now. Yeah. A lot going on. Again, they're not calling for help. You know, I'm going to commit suicide because I'm talking out of it. They don't even make a call.
Right.
And we've come across a couple times where we interrupted their thought process.
Really?
Yeah. So, and there's a lot that goes with it. There's a lot of responsibility that goes with that on our end. But we can only do so much right then and there. Mm-hmm. And I know BLM guys deal with it. We work with BLM every day, and they're awesome. And they deal with the same things we deal with, you know, because you have 10 guys for 2,600 miles and one sergeant. So, the good thing is, up here is beautiful. You guys are lucky. I'm jealous.
We're getting tons of gunfire off of the Fort Dean and Torino area, just all the time. And a lot of them you could hear. They're not over the hill.
Are you talking about Torino's Ranch in Logan Canyon?
No, Torino Road.
Torino Walking 160.
We patrol a lot, and that's another thing. The officer has to identify very quickly whether it's celebrity or what do they call it, celebration gunfire, or it's an active threat. You know what I mean? And those are things that the officer has to take, and they have to absorb that information in a very short, quick amount of time. You know, and out here, out in these rural areas, you get that, right? You get the farmer protecting his chickens from getting slaughtered from a coyote. You know, and he puts a coyote down with a, say, an AR or something. Is that a crime? You have to take it in the intent. Is he in Clark County? Absolutely. Is he in the blue dot area? Yeah, absolutely. But it's all about different policing. It's all about identifying what you have in front of you and making an educated, responsible decision. And I tell my guys all the time, what is the intent? What is the intent? So that's kind of how we do it.
Thank you. It's interesting stuff. Sounds like some of it should be disseminated to the public more widely.
Yeah, but you don't want to be Debbie Downer either. You know what I mean? You try to give the carrots as far as being safety. Like I said, we go to the range, go to the desert, don't run dry because there are people waiting for you to run dry.
I mean, I certainly make a point of that, but I'm not sure that the general thinking is that way. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
We have signs out throughout Red Rock in our kiosks about suicide prevention.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Sergeant.
Thank you.
Appreciate all the info. So I guess we are on to our next agenda here, which is report from BLM. So, Josh, I guess you're up.
I do not want to be the one between Megan and her mother.
Kit took care of that.
I
gotta start doing this one.
The latest update on the Calico Basin Recreation Area Management Plan is that we just confirmed with contracting that we bumped it to October 31st as the end date, and we added some additional funding. The plan is very complex. There's a lot that has to go into that, and we're working very closely with the county, and it's added more time and more the need for more money to really put together a thoughtful plan for how we're going to manage the recreation activities there. So it's no longer going to be delivered July 15th. We're looking at October. But before October comes, we'll have a draft plan that we'll present to the public. We'll hold more public meetings and give the public an opportunity to comment on what we propose as that plan. And then we'll take the comments, finalize the plan, and have a final recreation area management plan. The Legacy Trail is the geotech work started this week, and it's to be completed by July 1st. That project, what happens next is we're going to be working with Federal Highways and the contracted engineer firm that's doing the design work. From here, we have a 30% drawing. The geotech work will confirm the design of the trail, and from as long as everything goes well, and the landscape shows that this design is going to work, we'll move the drawings from a 30% to a 65%, which is almost final. Once it gets to a 65%, very little wiggle room happens between 65% and 100%. There's just some final engineering work that may have to get altered between that 65 and 100%, but we're well on our way. And that right now the goal is to have that final design and an environmental assessment complete by September. And we're gonna present to the public the environmental assessment for the Legacy Trail.
Does that mean at the 65% level, or will we be?
We'll be at 100% design once the EA is complete, because we'll do the environmental assessment on what that 100% design is.
You're just talking about that first section, right?
And this is for section one. Yeah, thank you. It's from Summerlin to the entrance to the scenic drive only. Yeah.
It seems like if you're at 100%. What's the point of the public hearing? Is it just for show or what?
We've already presented to the public the geotech work, so we've already given an opportunity for comments once. This next is for the public to respond to environmental impacts, and if there's enough comment that supports a change, then we're going to have to go to a change. I mean.
Okay, you just said a minute ago, though, that things are pretty locked in at 65, and so when we get to 100, you know.
It's locked in for the design. However, if public comment forces us to make a change, then that alters the project. And so we would have to go back. It could be a change to resource concerns, or it could be a design change.
I see. Thank you.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't want to comment till it was 100% because there could be changes.
Right.
It's kind of a chicken and egg kind of thing, you know? I mean, it's a tough one.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point, maybe.
And then for phase five, which is, it's from really 160 to Blue Diamond, we just got a very rough drawing that gives us a series of alternatives to look at. We haven't looked at them yet. It was just delivered to us from the engineering firm that's done the design work. But as soon as we get a chance to review that and respond to Federal Highways that it's something that we would even consider, we'll be doing similar exercises where we'll start presenting that to the public.
You didn't bring a copy for us to look at tonight.
I don't have. I've got a copy sitting in a digital file somewhere.
Yeah, I'm just
that's
kidding.
On the lot.
We talked about last time the option of going through Blue Diamond or staying close to 159, and I think we all.
I heard loud and clear that was not something we should consider, and I vocalized that with Federal Highways that wasn't something we wanted to consider.
Meaning we didn't want to consider going through Blue Diamond.
No.
Yeah.
We're gonna skirt around it. Yeah.
There'll be most a large man trap between the the bike trail and Blue Diamond.
Right. So, but we're not gonna go over the mountains. So we'll go through the NDOT right away, most likely. It's what that.
Josh, should people expect delays Saturday, Sunday, Monday, heading that way towards Red Rock with people coming? And will be people parking, from past years, people park on 159 to make it, where you can't do 50 miles an hour, where you got to really slow down?
For the Legacy Trail?
For traveling, let's say, all the way down Charleston and stuff like that. Like, we've always heard that sometimes there's backups down towards the entrance and the exit of the loop.
For the holiday? There.
Yeah.
Hasn't the appointment system kind of handled a lot of that?
Has that done?
Oh, yeah. We haven't
backed okay, up the highway. Okay, so it should be clear, CLA.
Yeah, since implementation of the timed entry system, we haven't backed up the highway one.
Good.
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Great.
Well, thank you.
Sorry, I confused. I was on subject
yeah.
B.
Yeah.
That's okay. We'll come up with something from out of left field for you next time, too.
But really, that's the only update that I had.
Good. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you so much.
And let's see.
I don't have much to report. Transform Clark County, they're kind of wrapping up the land use plan part of it. Now they took all the comments. Now they're putting the plan together. We continue to fight the outlying neighborhood, which was bringing the density up to one unit per 1 acre. We are not done fighting that, so don't worry. We're fight's still going. And then the next step is going to be talking about Title 30. I haven't gotten direction, none of us liaisons have gotten direction yet to bring that to the town boards, but as soon as we're ready, we'll bring that out and we'll discuss our favorite thing, Title III. And if you don't mind, I know I should have brought this up at the beginning, can we have NHP go now so he doesn't have to wait through the planning items?
Yes.
Sorry, guys.
Hi.
Clay Matson with the Highway Patrol. I'm our Commercial Enforcement Administrative Sergeant. I understand you guys have some concerns about the commercial trucks going along 159. We initially started, it's not an operation, just some more directed patrols on various times throughout the day to see what the truck traffic actually looks like. I personally come through the loop twice a month or twice a week, either early in the morning before the quarry opens up or in the afternoon on my way home. We also have some swing shift guys that are doing it and some other day shift guys. Every truck that we've contacted has had legitimate purpose to be on 159. The illegal parking that we've seen is typically right at the entrance to the quarry, and there are people that are waiting for the delivery time or their pickup time. Early in the morning, I've seen both of the drivers that I've spoken with have said, no, we're just waiting for the quarry to open. We've got appointments at 5 o'clock or whatever time they open. One of my partner sergeants actually went up to the quarry and spoke with the loadmaster, confirmed basically what the drivers were saying. I did some research on the Nevada revised statute just to make sure that I wasn't talking out of my other parts. And the law's pretty specific as far as if the vehicle is subject to apportion plates, being that they're in the apportionment system where they pay a certain amount and it's divvied up amongst the state for fuel tax purposes with other states, or over 26,000 pounds, the only time they can come along State Route 159 is if they have a delivery or a pickup along the route. It doesn't say that they necessarily have to take the shortest distance, so you could feasibly have a 28,000 pound box truck come from Charleston around the loop to come down to here. It's
when you say here, are you talking about Blue Diamond?
Or anywhere along the route.
Yeah.
Like if they're going to the park, they could go there.
Right.
If they're doing construction. My understanding is Mustang Mountain Ranch.
Bonnie Springs,
they're doing a housing development there now. Mm-hmm. You're gonna start seeing some increased truck traffic there. They can come from both ends of the State Route 159 because they have a legitimate delivery here in that, along that route. We have increased our patrol with commercial enforcement. We are limited though. We're down to, as of yesterday, we're down to 11 commercial enforcement troopers for the entire Southern Nevada. So, yeah. We're supposed to have 16 or 18 with three sergeants. We're down to 11, soon to be 10. And with the state recruitment retention, it's difficult to keep those guys. Typically with Highway Patrol, to get into commercial enforcement, you have to have about 5-7 years on unless you have previous experience. And then it's 2 years minimum of training before you're an effective inspector.
Are you the only ones who can ticket trucks that are on there, or can?
No. Metro can ticket them. Our regular patrol officers, patrol officers can do it because it's in about a revised statute. It's not a federal regulation. Typically, commercial enforcement with truck safety, we enforce the federal laws, which are adopted in the Nevada revised statute. And but being as it's an NRS, if they see it, they can stop it. They do have to have probable cause to stop the truck. We could probably stretch it to where if they see like a tractor trailer, they could pull it over and, hey, what's your reason for being out here? Oh, I've got a delivery here. All right, so have a nice day. The other issue that we've got is the parking, like you brought up with the parking on the shoulders for people hiking or whatever. It's the balance of, is it safer to follow them to where we get out off of 159
or do we stop right here? And now we're dealing with bicycles trying to pass out in the traffic back and forth. It's, for me, it's safer for us to follow that truck out. I know it looks bad, but I don't want to endanger a bicyclist or hikers with that truck being sitting there. So, any questions for me?
We had a lot of success in Level Canyon with our initiatives by having a reader board.
Okay.
Is there, could we get that? Because I feel like because it hasn't been enforced for so long, I think A, people think they can get away with it, and B, probably don't even know.
If it were the regular public, I would say probably. Most of your truck drivers, they're pretty hip to what the truck routes are and where they can and can't go. We could approach NDOT to see if they would be willing to put one up. The Highway Patrol, we don't own reader boards. If we use them, we borrow them from NDOT. Being as it is a state route, that would be their responsibility. It's an option.
I think it would be a great something to move forward on that.
Sure.
Because, you know, I can say just from being on that road many more times that there are definitely trucks that aren't delivering that are on that road that are just taking a shortcut.
And what kind of trucks are?
I would say box trucks usually.
Two axles?
Yeah, I would say.
Those are, the gross vehicle weight on those are like 25,999. And it's, I know it seems silly, but
no,
in our world, that 1 pound makes a big difference, like for a commercial driver.
What if they have something in it?
What's that?
And what if they weigh 250?
Well, and that's sort of our point, is will you go off to do their gross vehicle weight rating, the GVWR, or the actual weight? So first thing we will do is look at the VIN plate and, all right, you weigh 25,999. Hey, what do you have on board? Oh, we've got this, this, and this. We look at it and we'll determine if we want to put scales under it to verify that. The other issue that comes into play is once you get above 26,001 pounds, now you're required to have a commercial driver's license, which has a whole bunch of other regulations rather than I can go get a Penske box truck, as long as it says 26,000 or less, I can drive it on a Valor Class C. Just walk in and get it. With a CDL, and you have to go through all the other training to get that driver's license. So weighing it is an option. We do weights, but again, we have to have that evidence that they may be overloaded. So
kind of back to the reader board.
Mm-hmm.
Could you look into that? Or is that something we need to look into, or?
I would personally suggest you talk to NDOT.
I'll talk to NDOT about
that. Okay, yeah.
Pauline, where do you propose them to be?
At the entrance of both sides.
Of the 159?
Yeah, 159, because it's only on 159 is where the, you know, where you can't have the truck.
But you said at the beginning, every truck that you've stopped has had a legitimate reason. Every truck. So I don't know, and it's not just you doing it, it's all of your guys. So I don't know if there's...
What's the harm?
Okay.
Of having a reader.
Okay, so I'll ask. The BLM has a memorandum of understanding with NDOT regarding Highway 159 as well. So anything that goes on that highway, it has to be coordinated with each agency.
And
so then we would have to look at that reader board too.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a truck, a big truck, on Highway 159 in years. I don't know why. I just haven't. There is the mining operation up there on that road that they're authorized to use to transport the gypsum. So they have no choice but to import, export out of there. And out of, maybe they go the other route down the highway, they don't go to the Charleston place. I have never seen any trucks. If I saw it all the time, I would think that's a constant issue.
And I can speak from off-duty experience as well. My wife's grandmother lives in Crum, so we will go out there a couple times a month to work on the property. I've come through the loop at 4 in the morning, at 6 in the morning, at 10, at noon, back and forth. I've seen on my off-duty time in the 15 years I've been in commercial, maybe half a dozen trucks.
And I looked at it, and at one point I saw a Walmart truck. I'm like, that's off. That they shouldn't be here, but I'm off duty. There's nobody on a Saturday. That's the other problem we have is commercial enforcement only works Monday to Friday because of our short staff. Mm-hmm. I saw a night truck one morning parked out front, and I stopped, talked to him, and he had a pickup up there. And you're going to see the gamut of like bottom dump and end dumps hauling the actual aggregate from the quarry, I'm assuming to the plant, through the canyon. But you also see box trucks that may be picking up bags of gypsum for kitty litter, I think they use sometimes, or they might be exporting that to another facility to make gypsum board or anything else they use it for. There are some caveats to it. A public utility can come and go as they please. Garbage, obviously. School buses and charter buses. And I'm assuming that's for
we have charter buses. Yeah. We have a water truck that delivers water to Red Rock right now. Today we had a big truck delivering the drill to do the geotech work along the highway. So we're creating some construction as well, the BLM. Maybe we can notify you when we do those kind of things, you know? You know, if there's like a mass email, like we do that sometimes for Calico Basin, to let them know like, hey, we're spraying for weeds or shots herbicide or something, we'll let them know just so they're aware of what's going on. So maybe we can do something like that, letting you guys know like we're doing something in this area. So, you know, you're already well aware in advance. So
I know.
More than welcome to do that.
Pardon me. I did notice, I also looked at the signs. The other option is maybe approaching NDOT about making some bigger signs about the restriction, the weight restriction, because those are, they're not small, but they're not, they don't catch your attention. From my past experience with NDOT, they may be a little leery with those message boards because they are expensive. They are subject to vandalism and even theft. So it's hard to kind of secure those. Whereas a sign,
they don't have very many of them.
Yeah, and they're limited.
On other
for
things,
sure.
Yeah.
It's like pulling teeth when we need to borrow them for overnight operations. Mm-hmm. So,
but maybe a bigger permit sign.
Bigger permanent sign.
Yeah.
Let's go for that.
Everyone's
on board with that.
We're going to continue our patrols, just because it is our responsibility, and I bring my family out to the park couple times a year, and having trucks out here, it is a danger, you know. And I did 5 years on our fatal team. There's nothing worse than a box truck or a semi versus a bicycle. It's just, if we can make it safer, we do.
Bike trail coming.
What's that?
Bike trail coming.
And you know what? God bless you. That's all I can say. I grew up riding bikes, and I refuse to do it this time. It's scary.
I don't know.
We're limited on manpower. It's a crutch that you're probably hearing a lot of law enforcement say. That it's even just our regular patrol operations. I think we've only got, I want to say, 80 troopers for all three shifts, whereas we should be staffed close to 180, 170.
Don't put that in the minutes.
Yeah.
Don't put that in the minutes.
No, it's the truth though. You know, we're losing people to retirement. We're losing people to Metro and to Henderson and to other agencies that pay better. And everybody knows. It's just a matter of, you got to do what's best for your families. I chose to stay with the patrol for 18 years because I believe in the job that we do. That, and I did a year with Reno PD, going after barking dog calls and going into houses. And I'll walk up on a car every day. I don't 80-mile-an-hour traffic. I don't mind going into a house and not knowing what's going on in there. It scares me. So. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much
for being here. Thank you.
Do you want me to stick around or?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm
going to
go
so
see
much.
If I can catch my daughter's hockey game. Have a good night.
Thank you,
Clay.
Thanks for coming.
All right, so now we're up to our planning and zoning stuff. And the summary, is that what's in the agenda? Is that what I'm supposed to read? Or I think to read directly off of?
It should be just the summary, yeah.
Off of the agenda?
Yeah.
Okay, so what we have is ET21400073, and then in parentheses, UC-18-0913, Rexius, Richti, and Rochelle. Use permits, first extension of time for the following: 1, horse riding rental stable; 2, reduced lot area for a horse riding rental stable; and 3, allow an accessory agricultural building in the front yard; and 4, waive the required trees along all side and rear property lines. This is requesting a waiver of development standards to increase accessory structure height and design review for a residential boarding and horse riding rental stable in conjunction with a single family residence on a portion of 2.3 acres in a RE, Rural Estates Residential Zone, generally located on the west side of Coat Road, 280 feet south of Blue Diamond Road within Red Rock.
And don't read the second one, because the second one's exactly the same.
Oh, it is exactly
the same. And Chris is going to explain
right.
the difference.
And I'll just point out that this particular one is just the extension of time issue. So for something that's already...
Do you want to talk about them separately or together?
I'll talk about them together, I think.
Okay, and this is for as far as the extension of time goes, it's already been approved before, so...
So this, in the notes, it says a first extension of time was heard by the BCC on July 7th, 2021. That's pretty special.
Will be heard by the BCC.
No, it says a first extension was, as a property owner, desired to keep, it's in the history and request.
Probably because the second one's going 2 weeks later.
But it says it was heard.
Where did
and it says,
was
so I mean, is it a first extension of time? This is under history. So was it heard July 7th, 2020 or something?
No, it's going July 7th. So I don't know if they.
Okay. So that's just a little.
Maybe it will be.
So
maybe it's supposed
has
to be
there
be
been an extension on
no,
this,
this
one?
Is, no.
No.
This
okay.
The first
so time. That was just wrong.
Well, before
yeah, they just
the
leave.
Sick one.
Yeah.
Before you start, Chris, it's confusing because on the page here it says 7721 for
mm-hmm.
the first one. The second one says 7721. Then on the attachment A it says 7721 for the first one.
Yes.
72121. And then on the card it says July 21st for both of them. There's not a separation of the two. So
they both go on the same day or not?
I thought they were going the same day, but from this, I kind of agree with you that it looks like it's going to BCC on the 7th,
right?
Which is next.
Yeah. The first one looks like it's the 7th. The second one, 21st on this one. The 7th on this one, and on this one, they're both listed as the 21st.
Okay. So you know what? I filed the applications, but I guess I forwarded to Rick and Rochelle that I did file, and because of I guess where the filings were. They were on two different cycles, but because of where this agenda falls, that it actually gets both. So
right.
I think.
Can I see the card? Does it list both?
It's a. Because you're within that notification
yeah,
zone.
Yes.
This is for the new one.
That says the 21st.
That's for both of them. Yeah, it's for both of them there.
So the notification's already gone out for the 21st one. So
that seems odd.
I would talk to planning next week, see if they can go the same day.
Yeah,
since
I don't.
You're already hearing it. I don't see there's a reason why it couldn't, but.
Yeah,
oh, they probably
us,
already
whatever's.
Done that agenda.
Yeah, I'm fine just leaving it
with
planning.
Yeah,
however,
it's just confusing.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
I
mean, I don't think there's going to be any controversy, but just in case.
Yeah,
yeah,
we'll
yeah
be
so
both.
Good.
Yeah. So do you want to read the other one in? I can talk about both. The same
well,
time
Megan said
it's
that
well, it's exactly the same. Unless you want to read it again, it's
no,
exactly
not really.
The same.
And just read
just
the
number.
UC,
just
the UC-21.
Oh, okay, fine. So now the same stuff I read is now applicable to the second planning and zoning item, which is UC-21-0259. And I guess Megan explained to me earlier because I had looked at this and they are the same language as what I previously read, and I guess that you guys have some backup plan depending on what it's going to cost to play the game and stuff. And now before we progress with that part of it though, I'm wondering if does it make sense to just get as far as the first one goes, is there any are any of the neighbors for this area here besides Bob? Okay, do you have any objection to what they're trying to do to get there on the extension of time? Do you have any objection with that?
Well, not so much on the objective time, but
okay, I just wanted to know if we could just get that out of the way, and if you have something that you want us to hear about that, I'd love for you to speak about it.
Well, I think a lot of the rules have been changed out here, and
now, could you say your name, please,
Stephanie
and address?
Stephanie Roscoe, R-O-S-C-O-E.
And address?
11620 West Torino Avenue.
Thank you.
You know, the half-acre lots, we don't have to do this, but the next guy does.
Uh-huh.
The large arena. I'm glad they're horse people.
Now, is this relevant to the extension of time?
No.
No. Okay. So we'll bring that up in the next one. Because I mean, Megan, is this appropriate to just try to get the extension of time out of the way?
Let him go ahead and do the presentation so that you'll better understand why there's two applications.
Okay. Fine. All right. So.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. A lot of good information was shared tonight. Sort of, you have to come a little more often. I've been here obviously before, but. I don't know if it's the best point to share with people, but so this application has the history of this project. Obviously, it started about 5 years ago or so, maybe even a little bit more, when Rick and Michelle purchased the property, and we came through with a zone change application and some other applications to develop a rural estate, say an equestrian based community out in this area. So it's been a long time in the works, and it's sort of taken a little longer than I thought. And I think everybody expected, but Rick and Michelle have come through and built their house a couple of years ago, and that's fully built, and they continue to build the property. And one of the goals was also to build an equestrian type community. This is that next step in building that community. So we had the first project came through a couple of years ago, and we had that use permit approved with a couple of barns and a riding arena facility that was approved. And since that time, there's also been one of the parcels that have been sold, and there's that are immediately west south of Rick and Michelle. That parcel's been sold, and there's somebody in for building permits right now to build another home there. So that's on 3 acres, and that's coming through, and that'll be started here shortly. And then the thing, that was really the basis for the community was the riding facility. So, this is part of that process, and one of the things that we committed to with the original approval to sort of help maintain the rural character of this area, because I think that was one of the things that was really important for everybody, is that this area has been established as rural in nature, and by creating the size of lots that Rick has, and the next lot at 3 acres, and then also introducing the equestrian use, that it really firms up the rural character of the neighborhood, so that there couldn't be further encroachment into that rural neighborhood. So the site plan shows Rick's parcel, Rick and Rochelle's parcel. They've got their home, obviously, that's already been constructed. What's being proposed is this covered riding arena that has actually stables as well inside the riding arena. So it's completely covered, and then also a proposed barn, which is at about 3,000 square feet. So, what's changed is previously there was a smaller, probably can't see it, I'll try to pull it here so you can see as well. What was originally proposed was a smaller riding arena and less stables in that area. I think one of the passions that Rochelle has is providing a charitable organization where she does riding for victims of domestic abuse, both children and women. So that was one of her passions that she wanted to introduce with this facility, and that's what this is doing. And I think what she's identified, and so there's a couple of things that have caused a change in the plan. One of them is identifying that need and identifying that the types of vehicles that are sometimes used for some of these types of people require a little bit more room, so they can actually bring the vehicles inside the arena. This is going to be fully covered. You can see probably the best representation. It's going to be fully covered, so it'll be protected from the elements. And then one of the other reasons that they've decided to change the design is that they've realized, as they've lived there a couple of years, it's just the amount of noise that comes off Blue Diamond. Motorcycles go flying through or trucks go flying through, that it potentially could impact the horses with the noise, and you know, the lights. And so what they're doing is along the Blue Diamond side, that'll be totally enclosed. So there won't be any lights. Another thing that's very important is the lights are all recessed up inside where the ceiling is, so there won't be any, you know, the light will be very limited to just coming out, as opposed to any direct light that's going to be visible. On this side as well, it'll be covered, and then the only place that'll be open is on the exposed side towards them. And what they're going to have is actually automated roll down screens that'll actually come down so that they can provide shade, you know, and also help to climatize the facility a little bit more. So it protects the animals a little bit more. It limits the amount of light that's going to go out of there. And obviously, you can come up wind,
very
which is another thing.
Yeah,
it's just the concern of the safety of the animals and keeping them enclosed. There's a number of reasons for the change in the design, just to create, you know, a facility that sort of addressed the needs of Rochelle's passion, but also to create a design that was better for the animals as well, right? So those are the fundamental changes. There's a proposed barn in the back. There's, you know, that's what the barn will look like. But the structure is designed to be, you know, rustic in nature, right? You've got wood, you've got metal, and, you know, composite roof that are appropriate for the community. And so the design was important for them. And obviously, this is something that's going to be a significant investment to Rick and Rochelle and to the community. And then there's something in the staff report that I think so in the notice, and we did this 2 years ago when we did it, but I think it states that, you know, rental stables, right? So there's not actually going to be any rental of horses, so somebody couldn't come off the street and rent horses. That's prohibited. And I think the number of people that, you know, was agreed to in the previous application was 3 people at a time using the facility, so very limited in the number of people coming off site. So I don't know if I've covered everything, Rick or Michelle, if there's anything you think that I've left off, but just sort of, you know, gave an overview of what the, you know, the major changes, as I say, there's the increase in the area here, there's a reduction in the proposed barn, and then an increase in this area on the riding area. And that was just generally to create more of a controlled environment and a protected environment for, you know, everybody who uses it.
The other thing we did is instead of 12 by 12 stall, went 16 by 12. We, after talking to other people, it's just too tight for these horses.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
That increased the size. We actually have a lot of less horses here than the original. So, but anyway, it's gonna be better. Yeah, better set up.
So the way you'd explain it to me, you have the existing plan that you're asking for the extension of time on, and then you have a bigger green plan, maybe, that is the new use permit. And
right.
You want to have
so
both.
Probably talk about that
yes.
A little bit, yeah.
Yes.
Just so there's an existing use permit. Obviously, that's a little smaller facility. I think they've realized that the ultimate plan is what they'd like to do here, and so they'd like to keep that other permit active, right? It was set to expire in May, so we made the application. You know, the goal is to move forward with this application, but would like to keep and maintain that existing application, you know, until this one, you know, they sort of move forward. The plan is. And you guys can step in is to complete the design work now once the, you know, hopefully the use permit gets approved, complete the design work, the structural engineering work, which is obviously an expensive proposition, and then proceed with construction. So the goal would be to complete the design work, get permits, and start construction at the end of the year or the beginning of, you know, next year. And that's sort of like the county process right now for permitting is, you know, it's probably 3 to 4 months through the building process, sort of a similar amount of time for the design work. So that gets us through, you know, the end of this year.
What is this 75% reduction where it requires a 100,000, you're asking for 100,000 square foot riding stable and it should be 400,000 by code?
So I think that's for the land area required. So you require 400,000 square feet of land, right? So
reduce the lot area for a horse riding rental stable to 100,159 square feet.
So that's the size of the lots. Their lot size is 101,000 square feet. That's their lot size. And the required lot size for the way that the county classified this, they had to include it or classify it as a rental facility, rental riding facility. They couldn't figure out how to fit it in, and that's sort of what they stated was the best fit. And the requirement for a rental riding facility was 400,000 square feet. So the exact same thing that was previously approved and came before you is the same application. And it's interesting because you made a valid comment that it looks like it's the exact application, right? So this county said these are the tools, the use permits that you require to build this, right? And so I don't know if that's answering your question, but it's the lot size required would be 400,000 square feet. They've got 100,000 square feet.
Yeah, that was my question.
Yep.
Last time you were here, we talked about the water. Okay, and we talked about conditioning yourself not to use the UP water line. The UP water line was supposed to have 70 acre feet of water. It now dribbles somewhere closer to 20 acre feet of water through there. Our own water levels have dropped 6 feet in the last year. We are on a water moratorium, so for you to put your whole project and water all those horses off of our aquifer is very upsetting.
Wait, but don't you have your own well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so you talked about using UP water line for your new development.
So for our staff, we're not moving forward with that stuff right now.
That's not.
Right,
so okay, that's
is
not
that
this.
Something that could be in writing? Because that's my biggest concern.
Yeah, so what we're talking about is if
this.
We come through with any other applications for that development, we'll be back in front of you again, right? So tonight we're just talking about this facility, and they've got their own well to support this. So our previous application that we came through, we haven't moved forward with any of that at this point. If we come back through, then we'll be back through, you know, this board again, right? And we're gonna have those conversations.
So on this, all of that horse stables, all the horse watering is coming off of your well, not the UP water line. Do you have the water UP water line? Does it go to your property?
No.
Okay.
You can't have two water sources going to your property.
Well, you know, some people do.
Yeah, that's the answer.
Megan, put
yes.
on your put on your zoning hat here, please.
Okay.
Why on the preliminary staff conditions
mm-hmm.
That they're saying future land use applications, extensions of time will be reviewed for conformance, all because of the county's currently rewriting Title 30.
Yes.
What we're approving now, are they saying if there are changes that is will be done? I mean, it doesn't seem fair to an applicant where they're approved for something and then all of a sudden they got to go through a 2-year review. Or,
well, it's kind of like when there's a new building code, you have to act within a certain amount of time, or else it kicks you into the new building code. So I don't know how that's going to roll out with the change to Title 30.
Yeah.
I think this is just an advisory, like, hey, there's changes coming up, so just so you're aware.
So if there's no changes, then you know, can just say we don't need it. And the reason why I say that is Rick and Rochelle and Chris have done everything according to the rules, and if it were someone else, I would probably say yes, that's probably a good thing. But I've talked with you guys. I've seen what you've done. I mean, I have, you know, full faith. So my recommendation, I mean, I know there's going to be more conversation, but my recommendation would be to approve the ET 21-400073. So that's
the extension of time. Yeah.
Yes, the first one. Yes.
So when we're talking about public works and the restrictive covenant, the deed restriction, is that a separate vote now? Are we just looking at the extension of time? Because I do agree that even though this applicant's coming forward and saying they'll only have 3 people and they won't have any renters, and that doesn't mean that that property couldn't be sold and someone sees this gigantic, beautiful stable and that now they want to have rentals. So unless you put some kind of deed restriction on there, there really is no promise to the neighbors that that is going to remain in that very limited scope.
So I think the condition of approval, right, it states that there's no more than 3 people at a time, the right stable. So what we've requested and the conditions that are imposed, we're fine with those conditions, right? And those conditions, just like, and like the conditions, what happens with those, and Megan can talk to that, is the conditions as they're imposed or what are required. So if somebody came through and didn't abide by, so you're right, it does go with the land, right? And the conditions also go with the land. So if somebody were to change the use, they would not be allowed to change the use unless they came back and amended their application.
Yeah, they would have to comply with the
approval. Why does public work recommend a restrictive covenant on the deed?
Because they have
gotten,
if the county comes forward at some time, when we've signed restricted deed covenants on this property before, that if they come through and, you know, as part of the bond, right, so you post a bond for the improvement of the road, if they call the bond for some reason and want the road improved, then we'd be responsible for that. So we're fine with it. It's a typical standard condition, signing a restricted covenant.
Right, it says
that relates to public works.
You can waive the requirements now, but in the future, if you need to put them in, then you're going to have to do it.
And they can call those covenants, right? So that's not uncommon. So it's not related to the land use, it's related to the offset infrastructure improvements.
Right, okay, I know what you're talking about.
The use permit was 1875. This one doesn't have anything. Did they give you a freebie on that one?
Yeah.
On the extension, yeah.
No, it wasn't free.
No, everything is done electronically now. So.
I figured you've been there enough times that I figured maybe they said, what the heck, we'll throw one in.
Extension of time is $1,000.
May I just ask something? Jeannie Crowdy here. You know, I remember when you folks came to the town board meeting before about the house and the underground stable or whatever. You know, to me, and I could be really wrong about this, it looks like now it's becoming more commercial than what it was originally planned as. Maybe I missed something.
Well, I think it could be.
With these additions, it just seems like it's more commercial, not the rural environment that I always look for. That's just me.
No, I agree.
It's the same exact structure, actually, that we showed. The only difference is that don't go with the gray. That's just an example. The one of them has more of a natural wood stain on it, which I can do. This is just I think that's what's throwing everybody, because it's all wood. Those are wood posts to match our house. Actually, those are 8x8 posts going on all those, and everything inside is wood. The trusses are wood. Everything's wood, and it's got cedar inside, tongue and groove and all that. So you can see it if you look at close at the stalls and inside the arena and all that. So it's definitely all commercial would be if you're doing a metal one, like you see everywhere else they do the metal with the metal structure. And
yeah, I get what you're saying. It's right. Just, you know, I read horse riding / rental stable. I mean, that sounds commercial.
We're not.
Yeah, so
yes.
That was something, Chris Armstrong again, that the county said that what Rochelle was trying to do with the charitable intent.
I work with those people myself.
Yeah, there was no way to classify how to do that. So, and you can talk with the planning department. They tried to figure out what the best way to approach this was, and they said the only way to really do it is to have it listed as a rental facility, right? But it's limited so that she can't have more than three people, you know, on the property at one time that she's doing this for, and.
So that did not change.
No, so that condition, and we're fine with accepting that same condition, right? So the intent is to keep it in the same, you know, how it was previously approved, the same use as how it was previously approved. It's just they've identified that in order to better operate and protect the animals and have, you know, more of a riding space that's all covered and is the arena, you know, to be covered and be larger, right?
Okay.
So that's the primary difference. So it's not, we're not changing those conditions are being imposed on the second application as well, no more than three people, and Rick and Michelle are totally fine with accepting that condition, so it maintains that, you know, the residential character that I think people are wanting.
The way I understand it, the use is identical, it's just a structural change.
Yes. And that forced the
this
whole
building or this
building. Right? So if you know, I think what ideally would have been, you know, if the application, because as Megan said, it's exactly the same wording, right? And you're reading in, it's exactly what's the difference? It's because the structure actually changed, but the uses and the limitations on the uses are exactly the same.
Okay, thank you.
And just to be clear, the three people that will be there, if they have guests, there's like three people in the arena or three people total.
Three people having lessons at one time.
Right, but if they bring, a family or something like that.
Yeah, if they bring guests, they won't be in the arena,
right? Right. So that's strictly just the arena. Okay, good. Just to clarify that one. Good.
Okay, so when I got a phone call, there was a motion. Have we had a vote?
No, I'd like to say that, you know, the staff did say recommend a condition that requires a view in 2 years with an extension, and I think that would be appropriate for the neighbors that have concerns, that they would have another opportunity to speak out to this as the staff recommended.
Great.
How large was the one that's already been approved that you're looking for the extension of time? How large was the arena stable complex versus for the new one?
So that was around 12,000 square feet plus an additional barn, so it was about 15,000 square feet. So it was an increase of about 9,000 square feet.
I see. Great.
I'm just hoping that that review in 2 years is like the restaurant where they had a review in 2 years and Megan Wright, it was like, hello, welcome, bye, and they were gone. So hopefully there's nothing scary.
I think as long as their intent is to operate the use as indicated, and I think the concerns would be obviously too much traffic, too much of a commercial type use, and that's not at all the intent,
So I made a motion to approve the first one, ET, that one.
Well, I approve staff conditions?
Per staff conditions.
And is that staff condition requires a review in 2 years as a public hearing?
I believe that's in there.
Yeah, 2 years to commence and review as a public
staff
hearing.
Conditions.
Okay.
So, and you're okay with the extension part of this, the time extension of the original plan? So we have a motion, and I guess we'll take a vote on that, and I'm okay with it.
All in favor?
I'm in favor. With the staff.
For
meeting.
The extension. Yeah.
With it, yes.
I'll make a motion on UC 210259 to approve per county staff write up.
What are the staff?
Did you have more to say about this regarding this?
Not
at this time. You're okay then.
Yeah.
So we don't. Do we have any other objections? Anything like that? No. Okay.
So the staff conditions that you'd be including in the motions are 2 years to commence and review to ensure additional mitigation is not required, horse riding rental stable for participants in the therapeutic nonprofit treatment only, no monetary exchange or rental of horses, no more than 3 people at a time. In conjunction with horse riding rental stables, applicant is advised about the Title 30 changes. So in your motion, you're using those staff conditions.
Yeah.
So hopefully that helps with the neighbors, right? Like the intent is clear that it's not
It does clearly limit in the conditions, and I appreciate what you're saying. You feel like it's kind of running away in a direction without control, and that's why I think the 2-year review is helpful. And there are restrictions in the conditions.
Yes,
no rental, 3 participants only, for therapeutic non-profit treatment only. So there are things that are going to be in there, so that some of your concerns that it's going to morph into something else, and suddenly you'll be inheriting a different project, which I appreciate.
And Stephanie, I would encourage you to get involved with the Transform Clark County process, because I think a lot of your concerns are code related. So I'd really encourage you to put your comments in as we are rewriting the code, and maybe we'll get some of those things.
So we have a motion, Bob made a motion to approve.
Per county staff.
First staff.
First staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So all in favor?
Approve.
Yeah, I'm good.
Thank you for your time. No,
no, no monetary thing, but you can accept Dogecoin or Bitcoin or any crypto. Hey Megan, just before you go, can you I can leave this with Larry. Can you set something up with Republic Services of what they've been doing is one truck has been coming around for both garbage and recycle. They dump it in one container. One of the drivers told me they go to a separate area where they separate it. So I called up the office and they told me, well, they have a truck that comes out and they've got 2 different slots. And I said, I've never seen that.
Okay.
So something is going on with Republic Services. So either they're cutting corners.
I will either find out or ask the general manager to come out.
Yeah. And the other thing is posting locations. Can we make sure that Cocoa Road is one of the posting locations if we have to take one of the other ones
state
off?
State law has changed. And it only is posted at the meeting location.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
It's only posted at the meeting location.
Instead of the posting location and three others.
Right.
Really?
Cause, it just changed.
Because I looked it up online and it still had the old stuff. So.
Well, it just changed by the legislature effective July 1.
Wow. Oh, okay. So.
Or it was effective immediately. It was effective before July 1. So it was effective immediately like 2 weeks ago.
Do you tap dance?
Listen, I got a lot of stuff going on.
So,
it doesn't mean you can't post. If you want to post, your heart's content. But it means I don't have to race around.
So cancel the Colca or Bolton board request from
I didn't hear.
So are there any other general public comments?
You guys can keep talking. I just
Any other general public comments? No. Okay, so next meeting is July 28th, and before you close it, congratulations on running your first meeting. Congratulations. Job well done. All right, thank you, everybody. I guess the meeting is adjourned.